Welcome back to React Native Radio Podcast. Brought to you by Stranger Things, the Season 5. The real mystery is how many middle-aged people they allow to attend high school. Episode 348, from Ionic Evangelist to React Native Content Creator, Simon Graham.
And welcome back, React Native Radio fans. I have another one of my co-hosts back with me. Jamin, welcome back.
Hey, Mazen. It's really nice to be back. And also really nice to not have to do all the prep with you. I feel like I'm just along for the ride. I can just kind of be disruptive and, not really care the whole time, which I'm sure you appreciate.
That's how it felt like for me for a couple of years until you and Robin decided to take a sabbatical from this. Here we are.
Right. And yeah. That's fine. Yeah, record scratch. You're probably wondering how I got here.
Yeah. Well, I'm Mazen, he's Jamin, and we're React Native Radio. Today, we have a fun episode lined up for you all. We have Simon Grimm with us. Simon, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm fine. Glad you're already saying this is going to be a fun episode because we haven't even recorded yet.
Yeah, no pressure.
It's going to be a fun one. Yeah, no pressure. Before we kind of dig in, can you kind of introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. As you said, I'm Simon Grimm. I'm currently a content creator in the React Native ecosystem doing YouTube videos. I run a platform called galaxies.dev to help people get into React Native. I have a podcast called Rocket Ship. And I've been doing all of this for, I think, almost like 10 years at this point. But I started with different technology back then, so we can probably get into like the whole journey and how it's now later in this podcast.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's spoiler. That's our topic, kind of how your journey from Ionic to React Native. So we'll kind of dig into that. Well, welcome to the show. Excited to have you. Before we get into the topic, let's hear from our sponsor. InfiniRed is a premier React Native consultancy located fully remote in the U.S. We're a team of 30 senior plus level React Native developers and support staff and have been doing this for nearly a decade. If you're looking for React Native expertise for your next project, hit us up at infinite.red/radio. Don't forget to mention that you heard about us through the React Native Radio podcast.
Mazen, I think that was good. I think you should just keep doing this. You have this great voice for the ad.
Yeah, okay. I'll keep doing the ad. I've been trying to listen to a lot of NPR and trying to channel that dream.
Yeah, a little NPR in there. I like it.
Yeah.
There's probably people outside the U.S. who don't know what NPR is.
National Public Radio.
Here in the U.S., yeah. It's got this kind of like soothing sound to it. All the hosts, they're very soothing, and it's just kind of chill.
It's very like, yeah, mellow and slow. It's almost like you're listening to an episode on like 0.5 speed.
It's the total opposite of today's like Instagram Reels culture or TikTok culture. Does NPR have a TikTok? Because they would never be able to get three words out in a TikTok reel or whatever they're called.
Well, all right, let's get into our topic. Simon, we're going to talk about your journey from Ionic to React Native and kind of how that's fueled you to start galaxies.dev and Rocket Ship within there. I want to start off by asking you to please be honest with us. Do you miss Ionic?
A bit, honestly, a bit. Just the other day, I actually reconnected with the DevRel who has been working for Ionic for years, Mike Harting.
Hmm? Oh, yeah.
And we've been good friends like during the Ionic time. And then I kind of stopped doing Ionic. And at some point, he left Ionic. And like now, 2 years later, he's actually, I think, working for Prisma again as a DevRel. And we reconnected. And we had this moment of, oh, you still remember the Ionic conf? Yeah, that were good old times. So I do miss it a bit. I think it might actually have been a bit easier. There were also nasty bugs, but I feel like some parts were a bit easier. Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, because Ionic is it's using a WebView approach. Although they've heavily optimized it, but it's using a WebView approach, which means that you get the renderer built into the operating system. They don't have to try to rebuild it. Like there's some new stuff that's landing now. Like I just saw CSS Grid is on its way for React Native. And of course, Ionic has had that for years because the browser had it.
Yeah, I mean, Ionic was very early, and I think they filled a gap in the market at that point. I think, I don't know when they came out, like 2013, 14, something along those lines.
That sounds about right, yeah.
I think, yeah, it was kind of the same time, like React Native came out a bit later. but at that point, everyone was looking for like cross-platform solutions and how do we build for iOS and Android. I mean, just 5 years before that, everyone just started doing iOS in general and then Android. And then people were like, hey, we have the both platforms. Now let's, how can we do it for both platforms? So I think Ionic was a great idea back then. It kind of started, I mean, if we go back in history, there were other approaches. Like before Ionic, there already was Cordova, and there was like Titanium Studio and PhoneGap and like crazy other approaches. I actually wrote my bachelor thesis about like Titanium Studio or something.
Is that right?
If I look at that app, it's so ugly and so horrible.
Yeah, I remember Titanium. Was it Appcelerator as well?
Yeah,
was that a name that was in there?
Like, that was the whole time there was naming confusion. Appcelerator and Titanium, and then it was PhoneGap, and then it became Cordova, and like, the ecosystem already was a mess back then.
People are trying to find a solution for this cross-platform thing. Yeah.
Right. I mean, just look at what's been released in the last 1 or 2 years. People are still trying to find different solutions for cross-platform. It's not like React Native is the final solution to cross-platform, I guess.
Right.
Before Ionic, were you coming from the web track or were you coming from a native track? What was your kind of like background before that? And was it hard to pick it up?
I actually came from native iOS development from Objective-C. So in university, my friend and I wanted to build a game. So we taught ourselves Objective-C with a good old Stanford courses that you could do for free.
Nice. Well, I took those too. Yeah.
They were good. They were really good.
They were good.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're still doing it, right?
They still exist. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually came from native development back then. I had been doing, like when I was 15, I've been doing PHP and stuff. So I knew what the web was, but I wasn't really into it. And so I started my first job as an Objective-C developer, but then I kind of quickly transitioned into Ionic. I honestly just picked it up out of curiosity. We had these like Google Fridays at work where we were allowed to try technology, and someone was like, hey, have you seen this new framework? I'm like, yeah, let's check it out. And so I like made a blank project and I played a bit around with it. And then I was like, huh, it's actually interesting. I can build for iOS and Android now. So yeah, that opened up a lot of like doors back then.
Where did you go to university?
I was in Münster. That's where I live as well. Münster in Germany.
Okay. So I was under the impression that's more Android territory, but is Germany a little more iOS?
No, I think Germany is indeed more Android territory, but I used to hate Android because it looks ugly, and I always loved iOS, and that's how it still is.
So you were kind of counter like your culture there. You were on the other side of things.
Yeah. I guess I was, but you know, I kind of just wanted to ship Android as well because everyone kept saying, oh, we have so many Android users. Well, why are you not building for Android? So yeah, it made sense to pick up a cross-platform framework like Ionic back then. And honestly, I got into Ionic and then just later got into Angular. So for everyone, that's a bit like I haven't talked about that Ionic stuff for so long.
I know, right?
It's so long ago, yeah.
And you come on a React Native podcast to do it. Yeah, that's the fun part.
I'm sorry, folks. I'm going to keep that pod short.
And I think for a lot of people who are in the React Native sphere, it's always nice to know where you started off because that journey is also very important, right? Like I started very web heavy. PHP was kind of the first language I learned. Taught myself iOS. A little bit Objective-C along the way. Moved to another company that was web specific, but then I had to learn native development. And then that's when I kind of found out eventually about React Native and got into React Native. So coming from the native side with web really helped, I think, because I had both worlds with me. But some people are coming just from web and still able to kind of be successful through that trajectory. So the foundation that we lay with the first language that we start off is very important to where, you know, we eventually kind of end up. So this journey is fun for me to hear different paths, right? I have you might be the first person, Simon, that I think was fully Ionic, kind of moving on to React Native, that I've met personally.
As a backstory, I think absolutely if you come from web, it can be a bit harder to transition into mobile development than coming from iOS, because I was doing iOS development, and for example, back then we worked with Porsche as a client, and they expect pixel-perfect designs when they have applications. And so you have this ingrained in you, and then even if you're coming to like cross-platform development or web technology, you see it if that border is like 2 pixel or 1 pixel, or if it is just not aligned in the center. And sometimes if you come from web, you don't really like, yeah, there's responsive websites and stuff, and we can shrink the browser to a really short version, but usually that's not a mobile application. A mobile application is different. It has different patterns, navigations, just many things are different. So it can be a bit easier coming from native into like a cross-platform framework, I think. Coming back to Ionic and what I wanted to say. So Ionic back then was heavily Angular focused. So AngularJS, I don't know if people, I mean, last year or last 2 years, Angular had like a bit of a revival, I think.
Yeah,
but back then it was still like the biggest thing back then when Ionic came out. So they had 100% focus on AngularJS. And then there was like a big cut when Angular changed from AngularJS to Angular 2, and everyone hated Angular, and everyone said, oh, React is so much better, maybe we should try React, and then all the folks moved over to React. And then at some point, Ionic decided, well, maybe we should also support React, and then they had support for React and Vue and Angular, but that couldn't really help like prevent the sinking ship, I guess. I mean, people are still using Ionic. We can maybe talk about that as well in a couple of minutes. But in general, you have like this JavaScript framework, which is Angular, React, Vue. Ionic is more or less like a library of UI components that are styled with CSS. They're web components. And they absolutely look like the native counterparts, like a button, like an avatar. And just thinking about it, it's actually kind of like Flutter does it, right? Flutter is also faking all those components, right?
Nice. You said Flutter is faking it. To make it. I like that.
No, it's true. Yeah,
yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's re-implementing the like platform primitives. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So that's what Ionic did with the CSS. And then for the native part, you have like Cordova, which wraps your application, as James said, into a web view. And then it runs on the device, and it's not like a web view in the traditional sense. Of course, you don't see a URL bar or anything. It's just like an application. And at some point, Ionic developed their own solution called Capacitor for all this native interaction, which improved a lot of things. And I think Capacitor is also a great project still out there. And so, yeah, that's probably still the current state of Ionic. Like in general, you build Ionic applications with a JavaScript framework. You have Capacitor for accessing native features, just like we have Turbo modules and Expo modules. And Capacitor helps you to build your native application. And honestly, the result of Ionic, and I mean, I've done Ionic for like, I don't know, 5, 6, 7-ish years, and I've built Ionic Academy, which is a complete online school focused on Ionic. This what you get out of Ionic is actually good. Like back then, I was totally convinced that this is it. And still today, I think it's great for, I'd probably say like internal applications in companies. Applications that are not focused on the end consumer that expects like totally polished applications today. So if you have some internal tools that you want to develop, I think Ionic could probably be a great technology for a company if they're already using Angular and have web technologies.
Do you think that web views will get good enough eventually that you really don't need like the native views? Like you could actually just have, this was always kind of the promise of like PWAs back in the day, and still sometimes you hear about them where it's like, well, you can just use the browser, like just make a PWA. And I think for Android, you can get PWAs decent. I don't know. I may be completely talking out of turn here, but I feel like what I've heard is that PWAs can be pretty good on Android, but they're just not that good on iOS. And so you have this trade-off. So yeah, I guess the question is like, do you think that web views and the browser will get good enough?
It's funny. I also haven't heard the word PWA for quite some time. So that brings up many memories as well.
Right.
I mean, the whole debate whether the browser is good enough or not, we had that debate in 2015 already. At that point, I think it was a legit debate because Android devices 10 years ago, it was real trash, like getting something good on there. Devices have gotten a lot better. I mean, iOS, of course, but also most Android devices are very capable today compared to like how they've been 10 years ago. Is a WebView a great solution? It has some drawbacks. There are some limiting factors, but you can actually get a lot out of it. As I said, like for internal tools, it's totally fine. In some cases, you might not know that you're using an Ionic application. But overall, I think it lags a bit behind in the other approaches that we're seeing today. And just to wrap it up on the PWA stuff, that was always an interesting topic. Like, we developers kept talking about PWAs and how it's so cool to build it. And, like, nobody in my family knows what a PWA is. On iOS, you don't really get any notification. Yeah. You can go to, like, share page, and then you have to scroll down, add to home screen. And if you're lucky, it turns out into a usable app. I sometimes did it because I know about PWAs. But it's totally like unsupported on iOS, although they added like push stuff, I think, a couple of years, so you can actually do push. On Android, it always worked good.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm curious about is like when we record a couple of days ago, Apple announced something regarding mini apps. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I did see that. I didn't look into it too deeply yet.
Yeah, they're starting this mini apps program to support also Vibe coders and like people building HTML applications in JavaScript. I'm not entirely sure what that means, but they're really like making this term mini apps official with those web technologies. So I also haven't read through everything. I'm curious where this is going in the future and like who's benefiting really from it.
The mini apps thing is very interesting. I need to look into it more. It feels like it goes against a lot of what Apple originally stood for, where they didn't want people building like little app stores in the app store. That was why Expo kind of got downgraded back in the day, Expo Go. Part of the problem has been, so I've often said that native, like iOS and Android developers make the best React Native developers in a way. I don't mean that as a slam on web developers at all. Web developers are very, very capable, very productive, and they bring a lot to the table. It's just that iOS and Android developers don't accept some of the stuff we've put up with on the website. Like, we're just okay with things taking 300 milliseconds, and 300 milliseconds is for some reason just considered to be a fine measure of a response. And an iOS
that's my entering animation on every page.
Right? Yeah. And it's like an iOS developer would never, like, they would never accept that. It's just ridiculous. That does not feel right. Or at least in theory, that's the case. I have used a lot of iOS a lot of native iOS apps that are just, you know, pretty crap themselves. But so, okay, we've done the Ionic thing. Now you moved to React Native, and I'm actually really curious. We're going to actually stay a little bit on the Ionic side in some ways. I want to know from your perspective, when you come over here, this is sort of like when a native developer comes into React Native, or a web developer comes into React Native, as someone who's done a lot of Ionic, when you come into React Native, what do you wish that you could bring along from Ionic? Like, what does Ionic get right that React Native still doesn't have?
Out-of-the-box styled components, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly what makes Flutter developers also so happy when they get started with Flutter. When you start with Flutter, you have this giant library of things, and you put it together, and it just looks great, and with Ionic, I had the predefined components. Like, they had lists and avatar lists and buttons and cards and everything that you can imagine. And then you get started with React Native, and you, like, after a year, you're through the confusion of should you use CLI or Expo, and how do I build my project, and how can I just use Xcode, and all these questions. Like, 5 years ago, I finally had my project up, and I was like, why does this look so boring? Like, do I have to style everything on my own? Are you serious? And you're celebrating React Native? I guess that was my very first impression.
Yeah, and I assume there's a bunch of packages out there right now. Like, Native Wind, I believe, is one of them that's trying to help with that. Same with Expo UI. They're trying to give you the native, you know, primitives with, you know, their flavoring, of course, to kind of help you get that little foundation set up. So we're getting there, right? We keep saying that. We're not 1.0 yet, so we're getting there.
It is a little bit of a different, like, philosophy. Like, React Native is more, especially since it's in Meta, and Meta's not going to ship predefined components. They're just not going to do that. Expo might, and increasingly, the more we talk about React Native outside of Meta, we're really talking about Expo at this point. There are some exceptions to that, but Expo might, and I do think it's true. Like, Expo UI is a step that direction, but it's a little bit of a philosophical difference as well. Like, React Native is more, I guess, modular, kind of, you know, put together a bunch of different things to make what, and that's why the community has many different ways to style, many different ways to approach, you know, obviously things like state management and whatnot, where it feels like other solutions maybe are a little bit more, I don't know, like Rails or something, where they try to provide everything.
Yeah, I think at this point, if you're getting into React Native now, you have slightly different problems probably than I had back then. So as I said, I was mostly missing like the components. Mm-hmm. If you're now getting into React Native, I think you're going to be mostly confused because, like, as you just said, like, we have, there's Expo UI. Everyone's talking about Expo UI. Then we have Native Wind, which supports Tailwind. Then we have UniWind now, which seems to be better than Native Wind. We have UniStyles, which is better than StyleSheet, although StyleSheet is a good starting point for most React Native developers. Mm-hmm. And then we have also, like, a bunch of other, not necessarily smaller solutions, but different, like Tamagui and React Native Paper and, like, other libraries more focused on Android styling. So you're coming to React Native, and you're like, okay, which do I pick? So then you have selected one of those libraries, and you feel good about it. If you're a web developer, most likely UniWind or NativeWind, so you can just use styling. And then, like, okay, now what about my state? Should I use Redux? Is this cool? Or Zustand? Or Yotai? Or so I had a video. I think I already did this, like, end of this year, early this year, like 10 or 15 best libraries for React Native. And one comment lately was also, it's such a joke. You have to set up a React Native project and install 15 libraries before you can actually do anything. But as you just said, like, it's the philosophy of React. It's small, and the community is great. It's the great thing about it that we got all these great packages. But for people coming into it, and I also tweeted this, the problem is that the people coming to React Native, you don't know what you don't know. Like, you sometimes don't even know that you're looking for a component library, or you don't know that you need a state management library. And if you don't know that you need these things, React Native Directory won't help you, because you need to input, like, state, camera, button, whatever. And so it's, yeah, React Native for people coming to it, it's not easy. AI might make it easier a tiny bit, but it's still super confusing, I guess.
I think on that note, that's actually a very good point, because recently I was chatting with a friend that's trying to, like, start up a startup, and he's like, you know, the usual startup comments. I don't have any cash. I need to get something quick out the door. And his comment was, I'd like a package or something that I could init and get a quick design up and running, a state management, kind of get everything built and pushed forward. And he was like, I feel like Flutter is going to do that for me. And I was like, well, cool. Yep. Flutter will do that. I'm not exactly sure specifically, but then, you know, I showed him something like Ignite, which is our internal boilerplate, which has that, how can you say, we've kind of made those decisions a little bit for you based off of our experience within it. Now, yes, we've taken the path recently to kind of back out of state management, because you can kind of decide which state management package you want. Mobx State Tree was our, you know, blessed have you one at the time when we had it. So I do agree with you. If someone is starting off, you are confused because of the vast majority of options that you have. You tend to reach for what you know best. Like you said, if you're coming from web, something Tailwind specific is going to be the first thing I look out for, right? But then once I install that, right? Or even, you know, let's just say you saw a tweet that was like, oh, Tamagui is great for React Native. You're like, all right, I'm going to use Tamagui in my new project. But then you decide, this is not quite for me. I'm coming from web. I have more Native Wind. backtracking that and kind of going back to it makes it very complicated. So all these, you know, options really confuse and kind of muddy the water along the way. I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah, that was one of the goals of Ignite, which you can find on our GitHub or just going to infinite.red/ignite. The idea was we're going to shave like 2 weeks off the front of your project because you're not going to have to make all these decisions. Even if they're not like the best possible solution for your specific app, they are a good solution for almost every app. And we know that because we've shipped using these solutions. And I think trying to be the best possible solution for everybody is impossible. Like, you just can't really do it. Also, some boilerplates and project starter kits, they fall into the trap, actually many fall into the trap of doing whatever is like popular on Twitter that day. And we don't do that. Like, we pay attention to what's going on and what's new and everything, but we're not going to use like Uniwind until, like, we wouldn't put Uniwind into Ignite unless we've used it successfully on a full app. And we can then say, okay, here's the pros and the cons for that. There's a definite benefit to having a standard. We in recent years haven't pushed Ignite as much as we used to, simply because we know that there are a lot of different options out there and sort of like seeing where the community settles, because it has felt like it's been in flux, the stack. But the benefit of having a standard stack is you can jump into like our Infinite Red community Slack and ask a question about Ignite, and you're going to meet other developers who have that same stack, and they're going to have maybe dealt with the same problems you have, like, oh, I need to upgrade this thing, and I ran into this error, and you're not the only one who ran into that error because you're not the only one using that particular mix of packages. So having a standard is useful. It's, I think, pretty possible that we end up pushing Ignite even more in the future where we say, okay, we're getting decision fatigue as a community. Here's a stack that works, and it works really well, and we know how it works. I think it is in a good place right now, but I think that there's probably some new stuff with the new architecture happening that we may need to reevaluate some of the stack choices in the future. As Mazen said, we actually dropped our MobX state tree state management recently, just because we had gotten to a point with it. We still like MST, but we had gotten to a point with it where we knew that the community wasn't going that direction necessarily in the future. And there's a lot of projects where we're using other stuff, and there isn't yet like a clear winner there, even within Infinite Red, like not just in the community, but within Infinite Red.
Yeah. So looking back in my history, I was for a long time an Angular developer, AngularJS and Angular. And if you've used Angular, it is quite opinionated in how the file naming is, the file structure, your whole application, bootstrapping things. It is very opinionated. And honestly, I kind of liked it, because when I switched from Angular to React, I was really missing that structure. Like, where's my CLI to generate a file in the right place, or a directive or whatever? And as you just mentioned before, like with Rails or something, it would be so cool to have like a really opinionated stack. I mean, what you got with your boilerplate with Ignite, it is an opinionated stack. Just like if you look at the other boilerplates for React Native that are out there, there are a couple, or like a handful of them are quite good, but they're all going to have some opinions included because, hey, Zustand is the best library, or we use this one because Damon had a deal with us to include it. So there will always be opinionated stacks. And I mean, it would be cool to have something like that for React Native, which like emerges as the opinionated stack, kind of like Expo emerges as the framework to use. But then still in Expo, I mean, we're still super free. We're talking about UI and state libraries, and we haven't even touched like 20 other things you can decide when starting a new app. So if at any point we had something more opinionated that we could just say, yeah, if you're starting, just use this stack, that's a good one, then yeah, I'd be really happy about that.
Okay, so let's kind of come back to React Native and look at, you know, the latest developments within React Native. What excites you most about React Native, you know, now and kind of looking out into the future?
That's a really good question. I think we're at an interesting point with React Native right now. So at least from what I can tell. Like over the last couple of years, many problems have been solved or improved on. Debugging got a lot better with like how Meta revamped their whole tools and they're like building it out right now. I don't know, with the next release, they're going to have like the standalone client for Mac, and like the whole topic of debugging is so much better. Expo made so many things so much easier. EIS build, although like today when we were recording, there was like a little outage and you couldn't build your applications with EIS, but that's also when Mazen and I learned about JITPEG. So for everyone listening to this, look at JITPEG. I've never heard about it, but apparently it's part of the stack of what we're doing. There are many things. Over the last years, I was really excited about all the Expo releases, especially the stuff that Evan Bacon and his team were shipping, like Expo Router with Firebase routing, then the API routes, then the RSC stuff they introduced. And now we're honestly at a point where I'm like, huh, I actually don't know what I'm missing. Like, what am I looking most forward to today? And over the last days, I was also already thinking, like, I imagine that you might ask something like, Simon, what's going to be the future? What are you excited about? And I think we're kind of like coming from something in the past where everyone was working not exactly towards version 1.0, although we could probably say it, but everyone was working towards like, let's make React Native really good. Let's make styling really good. Let's make debugging really good. And we've kind of maybe hit, like, found this top place of the mountain, and now it spreads out again because Expo is so good and everything's so good. And now what we see is, like, there are other things coming up. Suddenly, we don't only have native wind, we also have uni wind because we can improve this. And CallStack came up with Rock because maybe Enterprise needs something different than Expo. And so we're kind of, like, moving now apart again into different directions, sort of, when we were branching out in React Native. And this is not something that will happen this year and like over the next 3 months, but this is like playing out, I think, over the next 2 or 3 years. There might be competitors to Expo at some point that are like really good competitors. There might be different styling solutions. There might be like things I can't yet imagine in the ecosystem of React Native, because we've now reached this. Honestly, we're kind of at React Native version 1 at this point with the new architecture. It is so stable. And like we're maybe now branching out again to explore the edges of what's possible in the future. I don't know what that's going to be. I just have this like feeling that it's like something's in the air and might change over the next 2-3 years. And it's not just AI. AI might, of course, change also a lot. Yeah, but there's something happening. Also, like, just as a final note to this, there's also the release of Lynx this year, Lynx from TikTok. I just saw the tweet from Xuan Huang, who retweeted the what Jamin just said, the CSS grid support. And he said, since we open sourced Lynx with native CSS, React Native has been catching up fast. So that's pretty cool to see. And then just last week, Snapchat open sourced their Valdi whatever cross-platform phrase. So it's like, yeah, we've hit a really good position, and now things are about to get interesting, I guess.
Yeah, I love that synopsis of it all. That you are right. I think, you know, the V1, the looming of V1 kind of coming over the horizon is what kind of everyone's looking out to. But I think for us to officially say we're at V1, it either should have been when new architecture was fully considered stable, right? Or there's something else that's coming up. And I think that's probably not just on Meta's shoulders, but also on the community's shoulders to kind of help decide what that is specifically for React Native, right? Because once CSS Grid kind of comes in, think of, you know, cross-platform and I think mainly web, right? Because in this scenario, we're looking at React specifically. There really isn't that much missing specifically. There might be some APIs, right? Because box shadows came in recently. So we don't have to worry about elevation and all those crazy shadow opacities that we had to do.
AI is always giving me the old version, never giving me box shadow.
I know. I wish. I just switched it recently and it's so much better. So yeah. much better. It's like you write it for web. So I think we need to kind of decide what that is, but then also that what that is could just be the continued evolution and stability of the React Native foundation, specifically not the React Native foundation, the foundation, the like core inner workings of React Native is what I mean.
Yeah, I was actually I actually met Nate Weinert, who goes by Nate Birdman on Twitter, and he's the creator of Tamagui. He's been on.
He lives on Hawaii, right?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, and so I was there with my wife and reached out to him. We've met up for coffee before when I've been there, and so we did it again, and it was great. Ended up extending into lunch because we had such a great conversation. He was showing me and talking to me about some of his next stuff that he's working on, which I don't have permission to share here. But there's the thing about Nate is it's unbelievable what he's able to do. Really, you know, one thing I really love about it is he thinks in terms of the whole ecosystem. He doesn't just like put together something that's really good on, you know, maybe the core React Native, but he does something that's going to be amazing on web as well as React Native Expo. He thinks about the build tools. He's really good at building his own tooling. What he's done is probably the closest I've seen to, you know, more cohesive. You see this with like Tamagui and then his product Takeout. You can see that he really thinks about everything, and he tries to provide like the UI kit. He's got a good design sense, so he's able to, you know, bring in really nice looking pieces. I feel like if Nate worked at like Expo or, you know, I think he actually used to work at Vercel and one of those places, I think that the community would probably get behind it a little more. It's a little tougher to do when it's one guy, even though he is so productive and able to build amazing stuff. But I could see someone like that coming up with maybe the next evolution and people jumping on board and making that happen. I mean, Vercel themselves are starting to put out some Expo stuff, some React Native stuff. Their V0 app is built in Expo. It's one of the best apps out there in Expo. Fernando Rojo, yes. Right? Yeah. He's an amazing developer, been for many years, and he went over to Vercel and is working on their mobile side of things. So maybe one of these companies will come up with something that we all jump on board. Maybe Infinite Red. Maybe we get our act together a little bit and provide something.
You had your chance already.
Yeah, right. You know, some of this I don't necessarily look at as our role anyway. As consultants, we aren't as worried about being... Well, we'll have opinions if people ask us. Like, we for sure will have opinions. But we're not necessarily going to come into a code base and say, we need to rewrite all this because it's not in our stack. Like, that's just not how we roll. We're good at... Really, we try to be good at everything. We try to be good at all the stuff.
You could have built the debugging tools. I think we talked about this on my podcast, right? What was the new debugging from Callstack? They had this like now directory of tools.
Yeah, Rosinite.
Yeah, Rosinite. All these names. It's honestly, it's so hard.
Yeah.
And by the way, did you also talk with Nate about One? Like a couple of months ago, he announced One, and I feel like he kind of made a sort of a big announcement. They even had like this video, and then after it just like fizzled out. I think that's maybe what you mean by if he would work for Vercel, he would get more support for his project. Because I think One is pretty legit.
It is pretty cool. Thing. Yeah. And it is actually still active. It's still making, in fact, the products that he has on the market right now, Takeout, and I think One might be a paid product as well, or at least part of it. But it is actually supporting his team. So he has enough sales and things are rolling along on those side, you know, that side. He's not necessarily making, he told me he's been so heads down building, he hasn't been tweeting much. but you know, he's able to do some cool stuff. One thing about One is that it does depend on some fairly bleeding edge stuff. So Zero is the, kind of the data layer and, sync engine behind it. And that has been rapidly evolving and breaking and stuff. Anyway, we should have him on for a podcast episode, but there's some interesting stuff happening there. But like you know, like we were saying, the community is a little fickle about like what they'll jump into and trust, right? So you have to earn that.
Awesome. Well, this has been a very fun conversation, Simon, and we're getting very close to time, and I kind of want to wrap up. Before we wrap up, I kind of want to shout out your podcast, Rocket Ship. We'll include that in the show
Great
notes.
Great podcast. And, definitely yes, subscribe.
Definitely subscribe. I think you have over 5,000 subscribers, which is awesome.
Amazing. Yeah.
You also make React Native courses over at galaxies.devs. I know you have one, I believe it's called Zero to Hero, with over 20,000 developers who have taken it. I think, you know, as a shout out to that, what kind of developers can benefit the most from this course, along with any other course that you have on your site?
So before Zero to Hero, I actually had like a library of courses, like 15 courses on different specific topics like push notifications, routing and whatnot. And then I wanted to make this one like real path, and that's become Zero to Hero. And it's really for people kind of starting at zero. Some people said like, oh, I had zero, but I couldn't take it. So you should probably know a bit about React and stuff to get started. I won't teach you JavaScript for loops or whatever. So Zero to Hero is usually for people getting started with React Native. And since this episode goes live probably somewhere in December, I can also say that I'm working on sort of like the next step, because after Zero to Hero, you need a bit more foundational stuff. I'm currently working on another course that's probably going to call Ship It or Ship to Production. So we got like Zero to Hero, and then we got Ship to Production, which goes like a bit more about how do you really set up your pipelines, your workflows? How do you correctly work with Git? How do you like have the right file structure to build scalable applications? And it's probably not going to be released in December, but it's hopefully coming out in January. But if you're listening to this in December, I might have a little React Native event calendar going on. So we could probably drop, I don't have the link yet while we record, but I can give you the link before this goes live so we can include it in the show notes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Simon, again, for coming onto this episode. This was fun. And we look forward to probably having you on here in the future again.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it is always fun to talk with you, finally meeting you, Mazen and Jamon. We had the pleasure two times on my podcast. Yeah. So always happy to come back. And I couldn't even talk about my passion project I've been working on over the last couple of days. But we're going to do this next time.
Yes.
Yeah, we do have to do it again for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you all for listening to this episode, and we'll see you all next time.
See y'all.
Bye.
As always, thanks to our editor, Todd Wirth, our assistant editor, Jed Bartoski, our marketing and episode release coordinator, Justin Husky, and our guest coordinator, Mazen Chami. Our producers and hosts are Jamin Holmgren, Robin Hines, and Mazen Chami. Thanks to our sponsor, Infinite Red. Check us out at infinite.red/radio. A special thanks to all of you listening today. Make sure to subscribe to React Native Radio on all the major podcasting platforms.